From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I want to remind you tomorrow to tune in, get that Friday financial update with Brian Cochran. Always great to hear from the Heritage Foundation. We're going to do that tomorrow. I wonder what we'll be talking about. But in this hour, we'll spend most of our time talking with Paul Gessing. Jim Williams is going to join us as well. But Paul with the Rio Grande Foundation and Heirs of Enchantment. But before we jump into that, I do want to bring your attention to a cause that we've been a part of for the last several years in this radio ministry, whether on KLYT or prior to that on KNKT. But that is with GFA World and their Christmas Critter campaign. Let me tell you a story. There's a couple, Shada and her husband, Renan, who had a small business in Asia, just selling snacks in a shop. And, things started, the economy started to turn and they were making less money. They were making enough at the time, to provide for their family, but things got really rough, especially when some medical issues hit Shada. Her back had issues and the symptoms were getting treated, but they weren't really coming up with a cure. And medical bills just kept piling up. Well, they come across a GFA missionary who shares the love of Christ with them and gets to know them and prays for Shada and for her healing. And eventually she was healed of the pain that she was experiencing. But one of the distributions came out with the Christmas Critter campaign, and Shada and her husband, Renan, were invited to attend. They got two goats, and with those goats, were able to obviously breed the goats and sell the offspring, and they got milk. So, it became another income for them and sustenance for them. And of course, they grew in Christ, and they give God all the glory for what they've seen happen in their lives. And clearly, with this happening, it's making a change in their community, and you can be a part of that. Whether it's selecting goats or some other gift to pass along, every gift that comes with the Christmas Critter campaign is delivered by a GFA representative who shares the love of Christ with those that receive the gift. It's real easy to find out more about it or to decide to be a part of it. All you need to do is go to klyt.fm, click on the Christmas Critter campaign banner at the top of the page, and you can actually digitally get the gift for the person you want to, for the ministry to send to someone in Asia. And now actually in parts of Africa, they're doing this as well. You can do that. Or if you want to talk to an operator, you can do that as well. If you click on that banner from klyt.fm, it takes you to a page where you'll see the KLYT logo and the toll-free number. Let me give that to you. It's 855-513-2127. Now, while you're running to get a pen and a piece of paper, I'll repeat it for you. Here you go. It's 855-513-2127. And we pray you not only become part of this and select one of these gifts, barnyard animals or a Bible or a mosquito net or one of the other bio sand filter for clean water, but let others know about the opportunity to make a difference in someone's life through GFA World and the Christmas Critter campaign. We'll be letting you know about that throughout the season until the actually first couple weeks of 2025. So go check it out, klyt.fm. Now, I mentioned our guest for the full hour is Paul Gessing. He's in studio with us from the Rio Grande Foundation. That's riograndefoundation.org or errorsofenchantment.com, where you can read up on the various blog pieces that Paul has put together. Mostly Paul, and sometimes others from his team, or he'll share an article. But Paul, welcome in to ABQ Connect again. Timely. Here we are just after, things happening.
Yeah, I appreciate the flexibility and being able to come in right after the election to talk about all of the things that happened, or at least some of the things. All of them would take quite a long time. But
well, and it's actually, I mean, it's still happening. We're still waiting to see what happens in the House, if that'll be a Republican majority or will remain in the power of the Democrat Party. But did you stay up relatively late?
I did indeed. As kind of a regular thing, I have been heading up to Santa Fe, to the liberal bastion, not just of Santa Fe, but KSFR Public Radio up in Santa Fe for election night coverage in recent years. Did it back in June for the primaries, and then here in the general election. So from 6 to 10 p.m., I was on the air along with a panel of more progressive folks, shall we say, but I was carrying the banner for conservative causes with that group up there.
Well, you know, kudos to them for having some kind of balance. I don't know how balanced it was, but
I made sure it was balanced there, Steve. I got my talking points in there in terms of explaining to them why I thought Trump would win. We did a little poll at the beginning of the panelists, and you'll be shocked to know that I was the only panelist who said Trump would win.
Yeah, that was tongue in cheek.
Yeah, and actually that might be that's a whole other subject. That might be the only poll in this that I guess Rasmussen did pretty good, but they've kind of lost a lot of integrity.
Well, I do think the pollsters still undervalued Trump's support. They underestimated it. The betting markets seem to be the new version of polls, and they've done a better job.
That's believable.
Can I ask you a question about that? You could go on to any odds makers page you want, Las Vegas odds makers, and it's actually illegal to bet on the elections, on federal elections. But all of them had odds.
Well, I'm wondering, was it illegal?
It's not illegal for them to give odds.
No, but was it illegal only in New Mexico, or could you do it in Nevada?
I think betting on federal elections is against the law. But yet they all had, the odds makers all were projecting.
And then,
the majority of the ones I looked at were projecting Trump.
Like you said, Paul, they were pretty spot on, but there was money involved. I mean,
Right. And the thing about the internet is that it may be illegal here or there, but it's not illegal somewhere.
Yeah.
And the internet is a global institution, and folks can go to sites based in the UK or the Bahamas or you name it. I'm not going to tell you how to engage in that sort of activity, and I will say that I did not place any bets on this particular election.
And I apologize for interrupting and sending us down this rabbit trail. You were at the station in Santa Fe. It took a poll. You were the only one who said that you thought Trump was going to pull this out.
Right.
Anything else to the evening there?
Oh, well, I mean, we talked about, of course, the abortion issue. The left wingers were very, very enthusiastic and afraid of the abortion issue. And I said, look, whether you agree with him or disagree with him, and the Rio Grande Foundation, my organization, is not engaged on this issue, but I look at the world through the constitutionalist prism.
Yeah.
The same one that Ruth Bader Ginsburg and said that abortion should be a state issue, as
it is.
Supreme Court handed down in the Dobbs decision, and we're currently dealing with.
As Megyn Kelly made it clear in her comments on it, that, take your half loaf, both sides. It's back to the states, and the Supreme Court isn't going to overturn something they did 2 years ago, a 50-year-old issue they may address.
Absolutely. So, there was a lot of that, we're going to be so much less free and this, that, and the other. And we know that's not true. In fact, I would argue that for overwhelming majorities of Americans, Donald J. Trump and his administration and the Congress that's being elected still, in terms of the votes cast as we speak, is going to be far more pro-freedom than the last 4 years, what we've seen. And, it's up to us to not just say, well, we did that. Things are done for 4 years or 2 years, and we can ignore politics. Because, folks, if you ignore politics, I can guarantee you the politicians will not ignore you. First and foremost, the bottom line, your dollars and cents, but all kinds of other issues that you have to be keeping track of. And both sides need to be held accountable.
Let me do a quick tease since we're on, you know, talking about the economic situation of our country and what might happen in the next few years with the incoming administration. A lot of folks watching what happened with the stock market yesterday. And Brian Cochran on tomorrow's ABQ Connect, although we had intended to talk about estate planning in more in depth, we're going to revisit that in the following weeks. But tomorrow he will spend some time talking about how to react to what we saw happening in the stock market. So
yeah, and the markets are loving things partially, and I think it's we'll say maybe 75% Trump and unified governments, and 25% just the fact that it looks like the results are so overwhelming that nobody's going to riot. There's no redux of January 6th, and you know both sides. There were concerns about. I did not believe that the right, so to speak, was going to. But there were businesses being boarded up in Washington D.C. and other major blue cities. Clearly concerned about the left wing rioting. I think that concern has been washed away. So we know the results. We're going to have a smooth transition, and partially the markets are reacting to that. But of course, they're reacting to the positive, I hope and presume, economic policy agenda that the Trump administration will promulgate in its next 4 years.
Well, and I would encourage the listener, of course, we always like to bring it back to Christ. Take the time. We should have been, and I've been transparent about my. I probably didn't get a good grade on how often I should have been praying for our administration for the last 4 years. I did, and I think if we're all honest, if you have been, thank you for doing that. Let's continue to pray for the current administration. They're still at the helm between now and January 20th, and be praying for the next administration. Not only that, bring it local. We talk about things in the roundhouse, whether with Paul once a month as we go over things from Errors of Enchantment or the Rio Grande Foundation's website and with others and discuss those things. But do be on your knees praying for God's will in these things. We're up against a break. Let's take a break and we'll come back. We'll take a little bit more look at the results of the general election and impacts on the ballot from the ballot and how they impacted New Mexico when we come back from the break with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. We'll be back after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. I had a full hour yesterday with Carla Sontag with the New Mexico Business Coalition and Better Together New Mexico. You can watch for that archived at abqconnect.online. If it's not there now, it'll be there by end of day today. So if you want to hear that discussion post-election. Right now, another full hour with a lot of great information. Always appreciate, Paul, the work you put into bringing our listeners information that's pertinent to them at errorsofenchantment.com and, of course, the RioGrandeFoundation.org. So we were talking about post-election. Let's bring it to New Mexico, Paul. Any surprises in the races for the House of Representatives or Senate?
Well, if you take it from where things stand, the trends that we saw on election night, there's no surprises in New Mexico. Extremely status quo election, which that is the surprise. The surprise is like the dog that doesn't bark at the delivery man or whatever. It's kind of what didn't happen. And as somebody who does public policy in New Mexico and very much advocates for and pushes for change, and the Albuquerque Journal editorialized for change, it's immensely disappointing that New Mexico did not change really at all in this election. Very much again, status quo. New Mexico's three congressional districts, all Democrat controlled. It was closer last time around with Yvette Harrell and Gabe Vasquez. I was not surprised that Nella Domenici lost, and the polling from Brian Sandoroff was right on. Not surprised that we were ultimately in the column of Kamala Harris as opposed to Donald Trump. I was immensely surprised at the legislative stasis, the lack of change in the legislature, overwhelming Democrat control in recent memory, and really only one pickup for each house on the Republican side.
In the roundhouse.
In the roundhouse, yeah. In the legislature, yes. So Las Cruces adopted a tax increase. No judges were non-retained, or judges all retained their jobs despite all the crime issues, despite the Albuquerque Journal editorial calling on people to be more critical with the judges. Again, just more of the same for New Mexico. So while
do you think the majority of people heading into the polls, say on the judges, that they just really don't know what to do? They're not informed. What do you put that towards?
Boy, I mean, I always question the level of information that people bring into the polling place, because if they peruse our heirsofenchantment.com or they listen to our conversations,
we had voting guides up for weeks on our website.
They would understand that New Mexico is not a poor state. It has policies that keep New Mexicans poor, while the state government itself spends more money and increases the amount that it keeps in various accounts. That it's not well governed, that the judges play a huge role in the crime issue, which everybody says is a big deal, but doesn't apparently vote like it. I mean, it is, I don't understand. I am back to square one when it comes to understanding the people of New Mexico and the way they vote, because they do complain, just like people everywhere complain about government this, government that. But in New Mexico, we have real reasons for it, because we are dead last in education. We're suffering from crime issues. Our economy is nowhere near as strong as it could or should be, especially with the oil and gas surplus. That's the thing that boggles my mind. When everybody else in the other 49 states gets together, and I'll be getting together, I'll be doing the tough duty of getting together with Grover Norquist and the Americans for Tax Reform in Tahoe here next week, which is why I couldn't sit down with you next Thursday. And we compare notes. Everybody will complain about what's going on in their own states, but here in New Mexico, we have more reason to complain, more reason to want to change than any other state in the country, and yet we vote like this, and it blows my mind.
Yeah, well, and it's come up a few times in the last week or two, and, you know, to encourage people, and Jim, you can help me remember the three things that we talked about, and when you're having conversations, and I'm stealing this from Gino Geraci in our conversation we had in the last week or so, remember clarity. Mm-hmm. When you come into the conversation, make sure you know the topic, the information, you know, have the information you need to have to reason with someone.
And don't pretend if you don't have the information.
Right. And then charity, which is, you know, extending grace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then civility.
Mm.
And you know, we're human. That can be difficult to do, but we've said many times on this show as well, when you're having these conversations as a Christian, and not everyone who listens to the show is a Christian, but listen, whether you're a Christian or not, you can be civil. And as a Christian, remember that you can be angry without being mean and nasty and name-calling, and you can be an ambassador for Christ. So,
Steve, let me say something about people that are not believers. If you employ Christian principles,
Yeah.
They work for unbelievers.
Right. Well, and you know, a good example of that is a lot of people who follow biblical standards, the things that line up biblically financially as financial advisors. Now, we happen to have someone on there regularly who's who is a Christian and is educated in, you know, using financial principles as they line up with the Bible. But there's, you know, good financial advisors who don't know Jesus, who use principles that do, and they weren't. Like, it's exactly what you're saying,
John. Well, even our present guest, Paul Gessing, I mean, Paul's a Catholic believer, very involved in that community, wonderful children, and he's always encouraging our politicians in this state to be fiscally responsible, biblical principles of spending money. Yeah. It's not rocket science. I mean, it really isn't. But Paul, we just continue not to spend money where it would be most effective.
Well, and before Paul, I want to hear your comment on that. But I would bring up stuff like education, where we spend more than a lot of states do on education, and it's not always the
money,
you know, the amount of money we put towards something. It's how it's done. And Paul, you could probably speak to that much better than I could.
Well, it's both the way it's done and the amount in terms of education. Our preference would be for a robust program of school choice to empower parents and families to choose the education that works for them and their children. In our family, we can afford to send our kids to the Catholic schools that we do, either St. Pius the 10th or St. Mary's downtown in Albuquerque. Two of my other children, my oldest two, did attend traditional public school, and we were able to make that work. But then COVID hit, and we kind of said this is not going to work out for us.
Hey, since we're on the topic of these options in education, I want to bring up LaLue's Christian Academy. They're going to be having an interest night at Calvary Church West Side. That's east of Coors, it's at Coors and Montaño at Calvary West Side. This is happening Thursday, November 14th at 6:30. And you know, whether there's no commitment here, come and get the information. Here's one of those alternatives that we try to show you every month. Last month we were talking about the school in Santa Fe,
Santa Fe Christian.
Yeah, but LaLuzChristianAcademy.org is the website for this month's featured school that will, you know, we'll be letting you know about that all month, and their interest meeting November 14th, 6:30 at Calvary Church West Side. I interrupted you again, Paul.
So, Paul, I got to ask you a question about this specific to education. We're 50th in the country in eighth grade math. We're 50th in the country in fourth grade reading.
Yep.
We're very near last, I think, in high school graduations.
Yep.
Across the state of New Mexico. So who's responsible for that? Look, I mean, I don't want to blame it on a person. Maybe it's the system. There's something broken. But then you have some public charter schools that are in the top 5% in the country, you know, in terms of efficiency in those areas.
As we hammer, and it's justified, there are a lot of teachers and people who work that are doing a fantastic job, some are not, and a lot of this goes back to parental involvement in their child's education.
Well, not only that, but we obviously have wonderful teachers, but I think we also have wonderful NBA basketball players that aren't coached very well.
Yeah, right.
Somebody's responsible for the wins and losses.
Yeah.
And yet, Paul, we seem not to make any adjustments. You said status quo election for New Mexico, and we're the only state in the United States that had a status quo election.
So in education, first and foremost, the free market works. Education, not just here in New Mexico, but around the country, is not a creature of market forces. It is a socialized system under government control. And that's a monopoly. So, you know, we can argue about monopolies, and then we can argue about government taxpayer-funded monopolies. And those tend to be very poor performing institutions, starting with the education system. Now, there are better and worse ways to fund and manage your education systems, and New Mexico has always struggled with that. I would point to our statewide funding formula as a proposition that has not functioned very well, because once you put a funding formula in place, the first thing the bureaucracies do is to figure out how to game the funding formula. And they do that very effectively, taking out local control, taking out the taxpayer of the equation, and the money comes in from the oil and gas industry, and it gets sent to Santa Fe, and then it gets sent out, whether you're doing amazing or very poorly. In fact, one of the features of education right now in our state, Santa Fe Public Schools announced that based on the numbers that they've had over the last decade or so, they've lost 25% of their students. So you have people going elsewhere, whether it's out of state or to non-public schools or homeschooling in their own areas. And the money, though, is piling up, and more money is being spent in education.
You're saving it for a rainy day, Paul.
Yeah. Well, this is the rainy day. You would figure if you're dead last in education.
I knew I was pushing a button.
This is the time to try some different options. But because it is a politically managed system, and because nobody is holding them accountable in Santa Fe, there is no impetus to change the way things are being done, which largely the things that are being done benefit the unions and the government bureaucrats. APS has made some changes. Their school board is trying to do things a little bit better, and there is an effort in that direction, but they're also contending with policies out of Santa Fe by this governor and by other policymakers that are pushing everything from the trans agenda to other policies that are not geared towards actually helping educate the students. Excellence is not the first and most important focus of our education system, period. And until that becomes the focus, we're going to be struggling at the very bottom.
All right. And listen, if you just tuned in, we're visiting with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. You'll find blogs by Paul and others at errorsofenchantment.com as well. And don't forget, Turning Point New Mexico, Paul's
Tipping Point.
Or Tipping Point. Thanks, Paul. Tipping That's Point okay. New Mexico, Paul's blog or his podcast that you can catch up with as well. We're going to continue our conversation, and we'll be back with more after the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, if you just tuned in, we're in the midst of a conversation. Jim Williams is in studio with us, ABQ Connect host, along with me, depending on what day you tune in. Kind of a roundtable today with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation post-election. Before we jump back into our conversation, I want to bring you back to what I talked about at the top of the hour, the Christmas Critter Campaign with GFA World. It's real easy to find out about. Go to our website at klyt.fm, and on the website, click on the Christmas Critter Campaign banner to help rescue families from poverty and show Christ's love. You can also call them toll-free at 1-855-513-2127. Here's that number again, 855-513-2127. 2127. And, you know, at the break, I thought, well, you know, let's figure out what direction we're going. And we went in the direction of the NFL. So we were off the air talking about this weekend's games coming up. Paul is a fan of the second best team in Pennsylvania. No, they're having a great season. Both of our teams doing well, the Eagles and the Steelers, which, if you didn't know, back during World War II, they combined to be the Steagles.
Steagles. Quite a name there. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take us to Cleveland, not the football team, the president. And
Things. Nice seg.
I got some
nice seg.
Historical stuff here, because not only do I love policy, but I'm a history nerd. And one of my favorite American presidents, somebody who...
Everyone needs new trivia games now.
There you go. Right. Well, Grover Cleveland was the first and at that time only president up until Tuesday night to have been elected to lose and then to run and win for president, you know, that second
ran
term.
Two terms, not non-consecutive
executive
terms.
Exactly. Yeah. And Grover Cleveland is one of the all-time great more libertarian or free markets presidents. And it's one of the truisms about American history is that the historians and the people who define who is a great president usually do so based on a war or some massive expansion of governments. You know, what new government programs did you come up with? Well, I judge, and I think probably you two as well, do judge the success of our presidents based on adherence to individual liberty, the Constitution, United States. And check this quote out from Grover Cleveland. So Trump has a lot to live up to, especially on the spending side. But here's a Grover Cleveland quote. When more of the people's sustenance is exacted through the form of taxation than is necessary to meet the just obligations of government and expenses of its economical administration, such exaction becomes ruthless extortion and a violation of the fundamental principles of free government. Grover Cleveland, folks. So he was president in the 1870s and 80s. He was the first post-Civil War Democrat elected to the presidency. And now Donald Trump joins him as the only two presidents in the nation to have been elected to lose the presidency and then to be elected once again.
Now, since you're a historian, Paul, and you mentioned him as a Democrat and reading that quote, how much has the Democratic Party changed since the 1870s? Now, and for that case, the Republican Party.
That's a fascinating one on the Republicans, but the Democratic Party is the exact opposite of what it used to be. Now, obviously, slavery and the Civil War, that was, and you know, you talk to people who don't know American history and they wonder, well, who freed the slaves? Who did, gave African-Americans the right to vote? All that stuff. It's Republicans down the line. But Democrats, you know, in the post-Civil War era, post-Reconstruction era, it was much more geared towards a limited view of government, states having a predominance in policymaking, and not a huge federal bureaucracy. One of the curious things about free trade, and that's an issue that's always been with us, is that Democrats used to be the party of free trade, like the Grover Cleveland era. The Republicans were the ones who were more tariff-friendly and restrictive of trade. And that is a feature, potentially, and one of the things that I'm going to be watching and kind of concerned with President Trump about is how hard does he go with the tariffs. Not too long ago, and I'm talking like George W. Bush era, but Mitt Romney, who obviously was not president, nor John McCain. The Republican Party, in recent memory, was a free trade party. Bill Clinton was a free trader as well. Both parties have kind of lost that zest for international trade. And we'll see if Trump goes hard on the tariffs and imposes a lot of them and what economic impact that will have, because it could have negative repercussions. So that's a fascinating question. I've got one other thing for you, though, and this pertains to the election results. And sorry to go all history nerdy on you.
I love it. I'm
Lew Wallace, the great Lew Wallace, territorial governor before New Mexico became a state, author of the novel Ben-Hur, which I've never seen the movie or read the book, but I'm told it's a very
you've never
wide
seen
ranging.
Charlton,
I know. I need to get on that. But Ben-Hur, another late 1800s fellow, probably contiguous with Grover Cleveland, wrote that all things based on experience elsewhere fail in New Mexico, and I think that says a lot about our political situation 150 plus years later, and this election, and the fact that New Mexico did not move the needle, despite more incentive to move the needle than probably any other state outside of California, and yet we stayed down the same path. So Lew Wallace's curse lives on.
There's a lot of things that our listeners can get that Paul is telling us about today, just touching on, can only do so much in an hour, but go to errorsofenchantment.com, errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, I'm looking right now at a post that says Tax Foundation ranks New Mexico 31st for tax competitiveness.
Yes.
Now, you have been all over Governor Grisham because we have a surplus from the oil and gas industry, and yet taxes are not being lowered.
Correct. And so the Tax Foundation, this is a very center, slightly center-right organization that studies tax policy. They did a recent report that analyzed New Mexico and the other 49 states based on things like corporate taxes, income taxes, sales taxes in our case, we call it the gross receipts tax, and property taxes, and unemployment insurance taxes. And they put them all together and figure out where the states come down in terms of how friendly or unfriendly they are. Now, 31 is not abysmal for a state that's often ranked very, very much to the bottom, as we talked about education. But we're nowhere near where we could be, especially given that oil and gas money.
How big is that surplus? Where does that rank? Do you know, compared to other states?
Oh, we're number one with a bullet, so to speak, in terms of the amount of money that we're bringing in. I mean, we could, if the last budget numbers we have for the fiscal year 2023 are that the state collected $15.2 billion from oil and gas, and our general fund spending is 10.2. Now, some of that money gets shuffled into these permanent funds, and we're sitting on $54.7 billion.
Rainy day.
Well, they actually, so part of it is a rainy day fund, part of it is a permanent fund. What the idea of the permanent fund was is that someday we're going to run out of oil and gas, and we have these mechanisms that
we
can use.
Are we?
That's the thought. I disagree with their assumptions, and those assumptions have obviously been disproven, but we're stuck with them in the Constitution until New Mexicans decide that they want to do something with that revenue. And for the time being, there's no need to tap into those permanent funds. We have so much money coming in, we could easily eliminate the state personal income tax and not break a sweat because of the money flowing in here. But we have this money sitting in these accounts. It's one of the ways our government is not as accountable as it should and could be. But in the state competitiveness index, we're 31st. Arizona's 15th. Utah's 16th. Texas, number 7. Oklahoma, 21st. Nobody is going in that we have that boom that's happening. None of those other states are booming like New Mexico, and yet they're all more competitive.
But
Colorado
Paul,
is
let's
not.
Talk about what people are doing with this information, though. Let's say you're in California. You don't like what's going on. Real estate's too expensive. You don't like the tax structure, so you start looking for a state to relocate to. Are you going to Texas or are you going to New Mexico?
Well, it does depend.
Based on this information.
It does depend on a lot of different factors.
Well, I guess if you're in the movie industry, we'll pay you to be in the movie industry.
Exactly.
Well, or the stuff at Mesa del Sol that we've talked about.
If you're a skier, you may want to stick in New Mexico. But in general, over decades, jobs and economic activity and growth have been going to states like Texas. Quite frankly, they've been going to all the other states around New Mexico, not just Texas. Colorado has traditionally been a strong economic blue state, but they've kind of finally gotten to the point where the bloom is wearing off the rose in Colorado. The traffic has gotten too bad. The crime has gotten too bad. The same problems that we're plagued with here in Albuquerque, Denver is in many of the same situations, even with the provisions that they have in their constitution that so effectively limit the size of government and their taxation. So you can only get so far with even constitutional spending and taxation protections. Eventually, the politicians, they're like the dinosaurs of Jurassic Park. They will find a way, and they are finding a way in Colorado. And so Colorado is going to come to a decision sometime in the not-too-distant future. Are they going to demand good government? Are they going to improve their state, or are they going to fall into the California oblivion that New Mexico
sounds a lot like,
yes, so much?
Sounds just like us.
Yeah, except for we haven't had the population growth in recent decades that Colorado has. We're a much older state. We're a much poorer state than Colorado. We don't have the traffic problems of Colorado. But yeah, it's both of those bluish states in the American Southwest have some real decisions to make.
Okay, so we brought up history a little while ago, and in relation to your question, Jim, before we go to a break, when you ask our New Mexico legislature how much is enough money for you guys in taxes, they obviously went to the school of John D. Rockefeller, who, when asked how much money is enough,
yeah,
says just a little more.
Yeah.
That's probably what we can expect. All right. Hey, listen, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more. Our final segment with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation right after the break on ABQ Connect. Hey, a reminder, tomorrow on the broadcast, a couple of regular segments, but you'll want to tune in. As I already mentioned, the Friday Financial Update with Brian Cochran from John Moore Associates. Although we had been going down the road of estate planning, we're going to return to that. But with the volatility of the I don't know about volatility. Well, maybe. We'll see what happens today. But the abundance of activity in the market in the last 24 hours, Brian's going to address that. And then also we'll hear from Genevieve Wood from the Heritage Foundation as well. And I imagine something election related. But Paul, as we get to this, people are election seasoned out. A couple of things. How important is it that we remain attentive to what's happening in regards to issues here in New Mexico in this lull, you might say? And really, is there anything between now and the roundhouse that should get our attention?
So, yeah, this is going to be with the holidays, of course. I now consider the holiday season starting with Halloween, and the stores clearly do as well.
It's state fair for me, because it's state fair, and then the balloons.
All right. Well, that's a good way to approach it. But we are moving into the traditional holiday season, and things will be a little bit less active politically after the election. And then, obviously, with things being status quo here in New Mexico, you're not going to see much change as we approach the session. Had Kamala Harris won, I think Michelle Lujan Grisham probably is on her way out the door, if not out the door. That's obviously not happening. And that would have set off an entire chain of events. For now, right now, I think what we're going to see probably in the next month or two before the legislative session is some candidates for mayor of Albuquerque come out of the woodwork.
Posturing?
Yes. Tim Keller is, of course, going to run for a third term, which is not something that's done in the presidency. Donald Trump is only going to do the two. Tim Keller doesn't have that prohibition on him, but I do think there's going to be a formidable opponent or two in the mayoral race.
Yeah, I don't see anyone comparing him to FDR.
No, for sure. So that's something that I look forward to. But, that's not really stuff. You can largely ignore that. Next November will be the mayoral race, and that will be a very impactful one for the city of Albuquerque. But we don't have to kind of, as average citizens, worry too much. More so as we come to the new year, and then the day after Martin Luther King Day, the 60-day session kicks off. Because of the lack of change in the legislature, it's going to be a defensive struggle. Taking that football metaphor, we might have a 6-5 would be a good score philosophically. 6-5 being a safety and a field goal in a football game, with the opponents having two field goals. We're hoping to just not get doors blown off here in the last 2 years of Michelle Lujan Grisham's administration. Paid family leave is the big one. I don't know how serious the crime conversation will be in the upcoming legislative session. I think that was posturing on the part of the governor, but we'll see. I don't know if there's going to be hard feelings with this governor in the legislature coming from the crime special session that we saw back in June. So Paid family leave, possibly another attack on gun rights. But, you know, the governor, her kind of mojo is petering out just by the fact that she's already been in office for six legislative sessions with Democrat majorities every step of the way. At this point in time, how many initiatives is she going to come up with? Paid family leave strikes me as number one. The setback issue, I did write about that at Heirs of Enchantment. There is an effort underway in the legislature to create a pretty massive amount of setback between oil and gas and various developments. And how that all goes legislatively is another one that I'm concerned about, and we'll be watching this session. But it is a 60-day session. That is the long session. Maybe paid legislatures, legislators, and how that works, it will be on the agenda as well. But I don't expect it will be as busy and contentious, with the exception of the paid family leave, which will be a very, very big fight in this 60-day session.
Paul, is the windfall of revenues to the state of New Mexico from the oil and gas industry due to the policies that Michelle Lujan Grisham has tried to put in place?
Absolutely not. And one of the things about oil and gas, for better and for worse, is that it works independently of a lot of government's things that happen in terms of the policies. So Lujan Grisham is not particularly pro-oil and gas. Now, she hasn't come after the industry as aggressively as maybe she could have, but the oil and gas industry is really being driven by fracking and new shale deposits that are being discovered in the Permian Basin. Joe Biden, also not an enthusiast for the oil and gas industry, but benefited from really ramped up production domestically, including in the Permian Basin during his time in office. Now, Trump is pro-energy. That should be good. That will be good, I believe, for the long-term future of our country. Hopefully, he cuts back a lot of the subsidies. He improves the permitting process, and that could result in price drops in oil and gas. It could even result in some level of less revenue for New Mexico, because if prices come down, and we start drilling in maybe Alaska and other places that have been put off limits to an extent under Biden, we could see lower prices for us, somewhat lower revenues for New Mexico from the oil and gas. So there's pluses and minuses, but overall, Trump's policies are going to be better for the country. Liquefied natural gas exports to foreign countries could both reduce CO2 emissions out of China and other countries. It could improve our foreign policy position vis-a-vis Russia. So we got a lot of positives to look forward to.
All right. Well, we appreciate Paul Gessing taking the time to join us once a month, a week early this month, but timely. Paul, glad you could come in, and we'll be interested to hear about your trip to Tahoe. You bringing your skis?
Unfortunately, no. Because
it's okay. It's Sierra cement. It's wet snow. They don't have nice powder there.
All right. Well,
so I'll feel bad.
Looks like we're going to have a good ski season, at least early on here in New Mexico, which I'll very much enjoy and take advantage of.
All right. We'll see you next month. Jim, thanks for joining us again. It's been fun.
Thank you, Steve. Enjoyed it.
Great to have you in. Stay with us. Jay Sekulow on the way next at 2 o'clock, and In the Market with Janet Parshall at 3. Some great programming on the way. Thanks for listening to ABQ Connect.